Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Welcome back to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com and by the Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth, about to talk to a very special guest today, and she is an author of a book, much more obviously than an author as well, Denise Schiffman out of Southern California, author of The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture. Have you ever been called hyper-interactive before, Brad?
Absolutely.
I guess that's a good thing, then.
Age, I think so.
Ageofengage.com. She's got a blog, too, and we'll talk about that as well. So Denise will be with us for a few segments here on the show today. Also have shortly coming up here, Shamin Abbas, Activist for Excellence, and it's PR to Manage a Crisis. And if you're in business, you probably had a crisis from time to time. It's a good idea to know how to handle that. Shamin has that. A little bit later on, Gene Bliss, our customer experience, and it's called Customer Whiplash. We'll find out what that's all about, too. So, good to have you here. Would you pay $190 for a Burger King burger?
No.
Okay, that was the right answer. That's good. I like that. World's most expensive burger, $190 a pop, is not to be found in an exclusive Manhattan restaurant, but in a tiny branch of Burger King in West London, as if things aren't already way too expensive there to begin with. It's only available to make it more attractive on Thursdays at a single location in West London. It's Burger King determined to show the world that it takes meat quality seriously. The fast food chain marketing for a limited edition gastronomic glory available once a week, Thursdays only in the single location. All proceeds go to a local children's charity. So with that, you know, that's kind of cool. The fact that they're doing something like that. Let's see.
Three.
Well, they don't really say here. At least I haven't seen that in the article. But what a great idea. You know, as far as Burger King being worth $190, no. But if it's a charity, yeah. That's a great idea. Well, Carl's Jr., I understand, out in California did that with some of their burgers as well. So, and those are really good burgers, by the way. So, anyway, that's that. So, here's to lunch. $190, probably ought to leave a tip.
Does it mention the charity?
No, it didn't say that. It's just this local children's charity. It's not about the meat. Let's see. You have to pre-order by telephone. You get you're ushered through a red velvet rope and up some steps to more upscale dining than the regulars there. Oh, there is a crisp table linen and free-flowing Tanapa Cabernet Shiraz from the Whalebone Vineyard in South Australia. So you're not drinking Coke with your burger. You've got a bottle of wine. That's cool,
I can only
hope
it's Kobe beef, I hope, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
For those burger lovers. You know, I was going to talk about this Fox News controversy and following your lunch item there. I'm going to go ahead and do it. You know, the Fox News channel has certainly been accused of going over the top to pump ratings in the past, but this latest hoopla over this past Sunday's edition of Geraldo at Large, on which footage of the body of model Ruslana Korsunova was shown, believe it or not, Ray. The young model died in New York this past weekend of an apparent suicide, having jumped to death, to her death, I should say. The footage shows the model on the ground, her body mostly covered, but her bloody face clearly visible to the camera. The footage, of course, now all over the internet. Fox News has said that it was a producer's error and that the network regrets it. I frankly, it mentioned that, you know, Geraldo made a voiceover when they were, or made a voiceover comment when they were showing that. So I doubt seriously that it was a producer error other than error in judgment. But I, you know, it's strange because I happened to have been surfing various news outlets at that time and came across that and saw it and couldn't believe that I thought it was a mistake. And then I thought, wait a minute, Geraldo is not a live program, I don't believe. And so it couldn't have been a live error. And, I thought it was just very strange to see that, and it was like I had to get off the channel, and it was like, who would make a judgment call like that on you know, on a news program? It just blew me away.
Somebody who will no longer work there, probably. Yeah. Shamin Abbas with us now here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
Today we're going to talk about how PR can help you manage a crisis, large or small. Sometimes the publicist's job isn't to find the news, it's to lessen the effect of news that puts the client on the defensive. Shaping public opinion through the media requires immediate and prompt, flawless professionalism, cooperation, and coordination. Never think that the media will go away if you just ignore the calls. In fact, you'll lose a very important opportunity to counter negative reports, present your point of view, and have control over your message. If you ignore the press, they'll write about that too, and as well as whatever's gotten them onto you in the first place. Oftentimes, if the situation has legal ramifications, an attorney is necessary to help vet the answers that can be given to the media. And a publicist should work very closely with an involved lawyer to make absolutely certain that the PR efforts don't inadvertently exacerbate the situation. At the first hint of a problem or issue, consult with your PR professional. You'll need help filtering through the media request for comment, and a publicist is your first line of defense to determine the reporter's angle. If your publicist is involved early enough, you may even be able to preempt the news of a crisis and get your version of events out first. One thing to remember that is crucial in a crisis is to tell it all, tell it fast, and tell the truth. It is always best when a mistake has been made to admit it up front and begin doing whatever possible to reestablish credibility and confidence. Practice the tough questions, rehearse, and over-prepare. Your publicist is there to help you handle crisis communications, and you need to utilize their expertise so that you don't make some of the most common mistakes, such as oversharing, lack of specificity, dodging the issue, assuming that you can speak to anyone off the record, and other mistakes that are easy to make when you're under pressure. Every crisis eventually passes, and a PR firm can help you manage the process, convey your message, and help minimize that damage.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional, with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, about to join up with Denise Schiffman out of Southern California, founder and principal of the strategic marketing and innovation consultancy Venture Essentials. In her 23-year marketing and management career, she has launched over 30 products, being responsible for over $2 billion in revenue, marketing, pioneering computer and web technologies, and reinventing the corporate brand of a Fortune 500 company. A lot of great things there. Her commentary has been featured in the New York Times and Business Week and on CNET. And, of course, she's got a book now. Denise's book, The Age of Engage. It's called Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture, which I think is an incredibly perfect description of who we are today. Denise with us here in just a moment on The Advertising Show.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn, or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
It's a real thing in the back of your mind. What you're hoping to find is a real thing.
Welcome back, Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth, with our very special guest this weekend, Denise Schiffman, out of Southern California, author of The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture. We'll tell you more about where to find out more about her book and find out more about her company as well. Hey, Denise, it is great to have you here on The Advertising Show.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, and I don't know how you managed to get Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, for a little praise on your book, and of course we need to move him to the front cover with that kind of name. How'd you do that?
Absolutely. Well, I've actually known Eric for 20 years. I did have him read the book in advance, and he really loved it and wanted to give a comment, but he is an old friend, so it was easy to tap into him.
Well, wonderful. We're going to urge everyone to change their homepage to google.com as a benefit to
really?
To Eric. Like, he needs the help, right?
Denise, we haven't done that already?
Yeah, right. I guess we did, didn't we?
Denise, your book is entitled The Age of Engage, as Ray mentioned. Why don't you start off by engaging our listeners and telling them a little bit about what it means to engage your customers in 2008?
You know, it specifically means what the definition of engage is: to attract and hold someone's attention. And in marketing, that really means attract them, hold their attention, and make them loyal customers. And now we have at our fingertips a way to do that. And I wrote The Age of Engage because all these new media tools, there's so much to learn today, and you've already got a full-time job if you're in marketing or if you're running a company. And I wanted to put together a very simple-to-read manual on what all of this means and how you can reshape your marketing but also reshape your company by thinking differently while you're implementing new media. It's not just about adding a blog, adding a podcast, adding a widget. It's really about changing your behavior and marketing with your customers, not pushing your marketing out to them.
So, you know, Web 2.0 is such a term being thrown around so often today. Did you pretty much just sum up what Web 2.0 is all about for our listeners that may not be familiar with that?
Well, sure. I mean, Web 2.0 really is a bunch of technologies and a bunch of products and a bunch of new companies. And it's all of that put together. So it is blogs and wikis and widgets and podcasts and even new microsites we're seeing come up. It's the technologies like RSS, where you can get feeds from anything that somebody is delivering online. It's also about Facebook and MySpace and Dig.com and Second Life and companies that are building platforms where users create the information that brings everybody back, and where you really have a user-generated model versus a corporate push model.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the new media, as you say, and social networks and so forth, and how to use those in an effective way today. But before we do that, you claim that so-called marketing laws have not changed since the beginning of time. I would imagine many of our listeners might find it unusual for an author who writes about innovation to say this. Explain, Denise, what you mean by the basic laws of marketing.
Well, we are used to the four P's, essentially. And every marketer has been brought up on that model. And it is a very narrow way of thinking about product delivery today. Today we have to think about how can I build marketability into my product? In other words, how do I build features, functions, services into the product so that customers are constantly coming back to my company? A great example is the Sony Walkman versus the Apple iPod. Sony Walkman, they got you to buy one. They did a lot of advertising to make you aware of it. You bought one and you never went back to Sony again. It took a huge amount of ad dollars to get you to be aware that you could buy a waterproof one or one that you can wear on your arm.
True.
But you really never went back to Sony. With the iPod, Apple thought through the entire whole customer solution, what people do with it, what they need, what they want. Every time you sync to get to the Apple Store or to get your information on your iPod, you're going back to Apple, and you're getting that branding, and you're getting the opportunity to buy something new from Apple. And that's what we're talking about, building marketability into the product versus thinking of it as an afterthought. And I think the other key thing we really need to think about is it doesn't really matter whether you sell furniture, whether you sell software. Your website or your any web interface can be the interface to your company. And you can create an experience through that interface that creates loyalty. You can provide an interesting data source, which can simply be a blog, or it can be a social community where there's always new, fresh information people want to come back to. And that really creates the loyalty loop.
Yeah, and we're going to delve into, I guess when you come to loyalty, and the other half of the equation on iPod would be the brilliance of creating iTunes, wouldn't you say?
It is part and parcel creating iTunes, but Apple does something significantly well, and that's in their focus. They do, their differentiator is style, and you see style across everything. It's not just that they provide a service. It's that anyone can use that service. My grandmother can use that service, as well as my six-year-old son. They've thought through what that means, a product that's really easy to use. When they first introduced the iPod, the tagline was, a thousand songs in your pocket. And what they really meant was those songs are available. It's not that you can just load them. It means that you can scan through them quickly. You can find what you're looking for because they physically added the wheel. The design, the look, the customer service, the kind of response you get from the company when you go into the stores, the kind of response you get from the salespeople and the technical experts there, they've thought through the whole thing end to end. And in a lot of ways, I introduced the 6Z's paradigm, which really leads towards that thinking. It's not just a marketing paradigm or how am I going to market my product. You have to think about how did you build it all the way to how are you going to service it, as well as how are you going to market it.
Special guest here on the Advertising Show is Denise Schiffman. The book we're talking about is The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And we've got more of the show coming up here in just a moment. Hope you stick around.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You're on The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. Happy to be talking today to Denise Schiffman, author of The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyperactive Interactive Culture. Of course, hyperactive is another way to describe my guest, too, but that's okay. It's ageofengage.com if you want to find out more. Denise, welcome back to the show. A pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, and a great site, by the way. You would expect someone that's written a book about the Age of Engage to have a decent site, right, Ray?
Yeah, really.
So check it out, ageofengage.com, as Ray mentioned. Wikis, blogs, and social networks, Denise, you know as well as we all do, they're only as good as the user-generated content that they can hold and share with other end users, if you will. Describe how many various approaches that you might recommend on how companies might motivate or engage their customers into using these new, more Web 2.0 channels of communication, if you will.
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people think if I put it up there, people will come.
Yeah, right.
This is so popular. Everybody's doing new media, but that doesn't always happen. And one of the things I advocate to everybody is make sure what you're doing is relevant, and make sure that before you put up a social site or a blog or a wiki, that you really thought through how this fits in with your corporate marketing strategy or your product-specific strategy, if it's a product-specific new media tool. you don't want to be off and left base. You don't want to be trying something wild and crazy that doesn't fit with who you are as a company and doesn't extend who you are as a company and what you're trying to get across in the marketplace. You can have fun with it. You can do low production value. You don't have to do the very high-end, very expensive stuff to be successful. In fact, we've seen the opposite to be true. But you need to have an original approach to the marketplace, and it needs to be relevant to your company as well as relevant to the marketplace. And you can actually take a very narrow perspective, a very narrow point of view on what it is you want to get across or a specific issue in your industry that people are a little bit riled about, because it tends to be when people are a little bit frustrated that they get talking first. And that can be a great way to do it. And we've seen some companies be very successful in this area. Dell put up IdeaStorm. They have had historically terrible troubles with their customer service. And customer service is a big part of an organization. It's hard to fix immediately. It will probably take them a couple of years to fix all of their problems. So in the meantime, they've got a social website up that is really focused on how their customers think and the customers' problems, and people being able to put up ideas of their own, being able to vote on other people's ideas, being able to see what's going on, what's valuable to their peers and not valuable, and really even rant about things. And that's what I think is spectacular. Companies need to put their arms around, they need to embrace customer ranting, if you can believe it. Especially as Americans, but in most parts of the world, people need to speak out when they're frustrated and hear back. And this is one thing that Web 2.0 really resolves for us. So I think the most successful sites embrace some of the negative, encourage the positive, but are very open, do a lot of sharing, and allow customers to really say what they think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You know, it takes also a lot of courage, I think, for companies to allow negative conversation on a site that they create. And yet there is so much credibility to that, to allowing that kind of platform to exist. You mentioned content has to be relevant to the company and relevant to the marketplace. Wouldn't you say, Denise, that you really need to turn those around in terms of priority? I think a lot of consumers today, you know, are really turned off when they see the relevancy of content so much about the company and so little to do with they as consumers, and that if you make it first about the marketplace and maybe second the relevancy to the company, you may become more successful.
That's absolutely correct. In fact, you hit the nail on the head. Today, we're really talking about the customer's experience. It's contextual, relevant to how they deal with their life or their business on a day-to-day business basis. Nike's done an amazing job here with Nike Plus, where running shoes have really been about the technology of the running shoe, and you have all the running shoe companies marketing and advertising and arguing their technology is better, it's better for long runs, it's better on your shins, it's more comfortable, it feels like you're running on the grass and bare feet.
Yeah,
it's all this technology. And what Nike did was they turned the competition on their head by looking at what a runner's life is like in terms of injuries, in terms of practice runs, in terms of nutrition, in terms of 10Ks they might run or preparing for a marathon run. And they have pulled a good percentage of their advertising dollars and put it into communities like the Nike Plus community, which they built the platform for. It's very nicely done. But where the actual community of runners, of customers, get online and provide all of the information, help each other out. They even market Nike products to each other by simply talking about ones that they love. It's an ideal situation where customers not only create the information, but they're very involved. They're completely engaged. And Nike has really turned the market upside down for its competitors.
Because they've taken the technical aspect out of it and made it personal for everyone. What a concept that
personal,
is.
Personal, absolutely. And that's key. Making it personal today, that's what's engaging.
Denise Schiffman, author of The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture. We've got more with Denise here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Stay with us.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
I drink Dr. Pepper and I'm proud. I used to be alone in a crowd. But now you look around these days. There seems to be a Dr. Pepper.
So what do you do with a photo of two tin cans and a string? You put them on the cover of a book and it sells a whole bunch of copies. And you call that book The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture. It's our special guest out of Southern California today, Denise Schiffman, the author of that book. Ageofengage.com, the website. Denise, so glad to have you here. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back, and hopefully that's an Ethernet cable and not a string on a cover representing the Internet.
Okay. There you go. Well, it looks like a string from a distance, okay? But it is an Internet cable, yes, yes.
Yeah, you know, you'd mentioned last segment, Denise, about your six V's that you have included in your book, and you say that it's possible for anyone to build and market products that thrive in today's marketplace by following these and giving attention to these six V's. I'm not going to go through all six because I have a lot to cover here in this last segment, but, you know, venture, value, voice, verification, vicinity, vehicle are the six. If you want to learn more, go buy Denise's book. But let's talk a little bit about voice. First of all, what's a company's voice and how do they establish it today?
Well, companies need to determine who they are as a company, what they're passionate about, what their vision of their business is, and what the vision of their industry is, and talk in those terms consistently over time. And that's what builds credibility and trust with your audiences, all of your audiences, not just your customers, but with your partners, with your shareholders, if you're public. Voice is critical because so much is built on that. It's very difficult to have a successful product or set of product lines if people today don't really know what you represent. Because if you
don't... I was just going to say, it sounds like that it's really kind of a management level developed idea, but yet I'm curious how much of what you're talking about is created by the culture or the employees.
It is created by the culture and the employees, but in most companies I've worked in, it's really led by the CEO. You tend to have a CEO personality that drives a lot of this, what the directive or what the passion of the company is. And it's more critical today than it's ever been in history, because if you don't define this clearly and you aren't consistent, the marketplace will do it for you. There's way too many bloggers out there. There's bloggers for every product in every industry. There are watch sites if you're a big enough company or in a big enough industry. So you really need to be clear and consistent and really excited about what you're doing and back it up 1,000 different ways, or else the marketplace will speak for you.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there are so many successful companies out there, including Starbucks. It's been in the news lately about some difficult economic times, but yet a good example of how the CEO and his thoughts and attitude and overall just message trickles down all the way to the consumer experience. You know, let's talk a little bit about value for a second. You dedicated a chapter to value, and I think a lot of our listeners would be interested in very quickly going through a little bit of each of the five things that you say you must now do today about value and how to extend value to your consumers. You say if your product has non-unique value, you will be selling on price alone. That's obvious, I think. If you create real or perceived value, you can ask for a higher price and get it. I think that also speaks for itself. But one that might be intriguing to our listeners, free can be a great value. Talk a little bit about that, Denise.
That's also an interesting aspect of the web, and it's very much been driven by the web because so much is given away for free, and in a lot of cases we use advertising to support that model, and that's not actually what I'm suggesting here. What I am suggesting is look at your product set, look at what you do as a company, and what can be offered for free that would entice customers or prospects to come to you, to come back over and over again, and make sure you're pricing or selling what is valued as a product or service that they use. And free can simply be information. It can be leasing terms or other information you tend to keep private and only discuss one-on-one. You can make that actually public information in a database, something they can get updated in a widget on their desktop on a daily basis, and find that you're giving your customers information they didn't have easy access to before or free access to before, and suddenly they're coming back to you over and over again. You're top of mind when they're ready to purchase or they're purchasing more. So free is really a way of thinking, what are we selling and what can we give away for free that brings customers back to buy more of what we're selling?
Yeah, and you also say, and we just have about a minute left here, you also say that you cannot lie about value, and certainly we should all know about that today with the connected world that we live in. And a value prop is not a list of benefits. And again, I encourage you to check out the book. Leave us with one thought for our listeners. If you had only one piece of advice, Denise, to share with our listeners from your book, what would it be?
You know, you just mentioned you cannot lie, and I think one of the big subjects today and one of the big subjects in this book is authenticity and transparency, and that is a good starting point. Be authentic, be transparent, provide more information to the marketplace. When something goes wrong, be the first to get that information out and build that credibility and trust, because you can do almost anything from there.
That's a good thought to leave us on, Denise, and we wish you the best with the book and obviously with an incredibly cool career as well. Denise Schiffman, author of The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture. Ageofengage.com. Go get the book and you can read all about it there. Denise, thanks again, and thanks for being with us here.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks, Brad.
On The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Back in a minute.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
I love the sound of the rain. Mm.
And I love the taste of your fresh fruit coffee.
Oh, thanks, but it's not fresh fruit.
And what a great guest, Denise Schiffman, author of The Age of Engage, Reinventing Marketing for Today's Connected, Collaborative, and Hyper-Interactive Culture, ageofengage.com. I hope she sells a lot of those books. They're good. Absolutely good. We've got Gene Bliss coming your way here momentarily. The customer experience is that feature, and it's called Customer Whiplash, and we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But I saw you had something there, and I wanted to see what that was.
Well, you know, and by the way, Customer Whiplash, that's when a customer gets rear-ended. Sitting in traffic, I
guess.
I don't know. Yeah, well, it might. You know, let me just, I just wanted to say this rather than mention an item. Boy, I got to tell you, I don't know how you feel about this, Ray, but between George Carlin passing away recently and then, of course, Tim Russert, what I learned about Tim Russert that I think many of us maybe didn't know, we maybe sensed it, but we didn't know it, and that was What a really well-loved and respected and just all-around nice guy that Tim Russert was. I mean, you know, unfortunately, sometimes a person has to pass away for everyone to know that people around him knew that, of course. And I think that was a wonderful tribute that everyone came out and made that known about how just such a nice guy he was. As far as George Carlin, my goodness. You know, you and I, Ray, we come from, you know, being exposed to George Carlin stuff most of his career, not all of his career. But what a huge, huge, towering figure in the world of comedy. And so many comedians today owe their success to George Carlin, including Jerry Seinfeld and other what are considered giants today. But what a wonderful guy. I didn't realize that he had the heart condition, but, you know, he, like many others that have gone, like Johnny Carson and others, will be known for many, many years, and his content and comedy will live on forever, I think.
Yeah, and Russert, as far as Russert goes, he was pretty much what Denise was talking about. He was a brand that people loved and trusted, and even though we didn't speak a lot about him, we miss him dearly because he was who he was. And a truthful and honest person. And obviously he did a good job with his life. I think that's one of the things. If you can say that about somebody, you know, they came into this world and they made a difference, and they made a positive difference in what they did. And you really believe what they said. And ironically, believe what they said is a kind of a funny thing to say for the news media, because most people don't trust the news media, but people trusted Tim Russert. And they believed what he said was the truth, and he did incredible interviews. As far as Carlin goes, that's really sad. I, you know, he smoked like a fiend as well. I don't know whether he smoked in his latter years, but you can't help but hurt your heart by doing that. So but Carlin.
He also admitted that he did the very first Saturday Night Live
on cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he had a history of drug and alcoholism. He admitted to that. I think you're right, though, Ray. He did clean up his act towards the end of his life.
But, yeah, and he was a genius as well, and we will miss him as well. Hey, we've got, Gene Bliss coming up here on the Advertising Show. This is called Customer Whiplash.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Hey, the University of Michigan's American Customer Satisfaction Index for the fourth quarter of 2007 just came out, and they revealed something that customers around the world already know, and that's that there is a disconnect between the experience we're having in a company's store and their website. Survey says e-tailers scored an 83 on a scale of 100 compared to an overall rating of 71 for store operators. Is this an aha moment? It seems that it is. The fact of the matter is that we've taken the humanity out of the web experience. The customer controls it. And even though some sites are clunky, those blips are often forgiven. In the stores, on the other hand, there are more variables and the customer expectations are higher. You'd expect a salesperson to greet you and have an answer to the question. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. You'd expect the store layout to be easy to understand and even an enjoyable experience. In the end, the brand suffers because customers expect and deserve the right hand in-store experience to connect with the left hand, the web experience.
This has been your weekly installment of the Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Thank you, as always, Gene Bliss, here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. By the way, next week, Andrea Learned, who is author of Don't Think Pink, What Really Makes Women Buy and How to Increase Your Share of This Crucial Market. So it's Andrea next week on The Advertising Show. So we're glad to have that coming up here. As we spend this holiday weekend with you, with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. By the way, Shipple.com does an incredible job of powering this this endeavor with a product called Tendency. Ed Shipple and his gang in the Houston market are our web folks. And Tendency is a platform for marketing, and just a You wouldn't believe the numbers on the advertising show. They're big. And we thank Ed for that. Shipple.com is the place to go. Advertising show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And also by the Captivate Network. Saw them in an elevator this past week. You can visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.